1 week into the war, a money programme special now on BBC Two examines the importance of control of Iraq's oil to the battle plan for our global economy.
The advocates of war insist it's not about oil. But when the fighting's over, it will have to be. Because everybody needs Iraq's massive reserves. For oil companies, it's a fight for survival.
For the supermajors, it's essential to be in Iraq. They will not remain supermajors if they're not part of Iraq's oil future.
But it's not just companies who are desperate for Iraqi oil. The West will soon begin to run short of supplies, and Iraq could be a lifeline.
Physical shortages are a real, real serious concern.
In fact, global oil production is on the brink of terminal decline. Some predict as soon as 2010. The consequences could be catastrophic.
We could look back in 20 years' time and see the present crisis as the first of the oil wars.
This is the story of the hidden agenda behind the invasion of Iraq. How much has this war really been about control over a dwindling resource? The lure of Iraqi oil stretches a long way, all the way to Dublin. David Horgan runs a tiny Irish oil company. They already produce oil in Texas and South America. But in 1997, David Horgan turned his sights on Iraq.
Why Iraq? Because that's where the oil is. There is no mineral or oil exploration play anywhere in the world that comes close to Iraq. You could drop the North Sea, the entire North Sea, from beginning to end, into three or four Iraqi fields. So this really is a bonanza.
Okay.
4 years ago, David Horgan set off for Baghdad to try to cut a deal. UN sanctions were still in force, but he was determined to be the first in the moment they were lifted. What Horgan found was that sanctions had crippled the Iraqi industry. The Ministry of Oil was keen to develop, so Horgan began to negotiate for exploration rights covering a patch of desert a third the size of Ireland. Eventually, he persuaded the Iraqis to give him some crucial seismic surveys of the area.
So, where are these seismic lines?
These seismic lines are located in the area around here. And they do trend from northeast to southwest.
Right.
Horgan then hired in specialist consultants. One is an Iraqi professor of geology. They started to analyze the seismic surveys to see if there were any geological structures which might contain oil. Their early impressions were encouraging.
So we reckon that this structure should be as good as the other discoveries.
And if it's oil prone, we're laughing.
Absolutely. The source is here.
The company's chairman knew it was hugely risky dealing with Iraq, but even he was beginning to think it might be worth it.
When you're going to find amongst the biggest discoveries in the world, secondly, the quality is going to be very good, and thirdly, your cost of production are the cheapest in the world, it's a very easy choice as to where you want to go to explore.
There's a regional structure here.
The company had no qualms dealing with the Iraqi regime. And by the end of last year, it looked as if they were on the point of clinching a final deal.
I've no doubt about that.
We have come to the conclusion that there are very large structures in the Western Desert, billion barrel type structures, and that really is a prize that any oil man would travel anywhere to get.
And many already have. The Russian giant Lukoil originally won a contract to develop a massive oil field. But because of sanctions, they couldn't do the work, so the contract is now in dispute. Total of France also held years of negotiations for two big fields, but their deal remains unsigned. Then, as Saddam's days began to look increasingly numbered, Big Oil shifted its attention to Iraq's many opposition groups. They met in London last December to prepare for power, and they've been inundated by oil companies lobbying for access post-Saddam.
The inquiry always had been the same, whether or not they have a chance to bid for future Iraqi oil.
Has BP been in touch?
I'm afraid I cannot confirm any of these companies.
ExxonMobil?
The same.
Total?
Well, as I said, large European companies have been in touch, yes.
And large American ones?
Indeed, yes.
From the rich oil fields of Kirkut in central Iraq...
It's not surprising the big oil companies are desperate to return to Iraq. They carved it up once before. After the First World War, BP, Shell, Exxon and Total owned the Iraq Petroleum Company. They paid the Iraqis pennies for each barrel of oil and built a pipeline to take it away.
And to mark a great engineering achievement, King Faisal arrived to open the pipeline. He was escorted to the dais by Admiral of the Fleet Sir John Cunningham, the chairman of the company.
In 1972, the Iraqis nationalized the industry and threw the foreigners out. From then on, Western oil companies could only dream of Iraq's oil reserves, the second largest in the world. With Saddam came decades of war and sanctions, so those massive reserves lay largely untouched. But as regime change began to look more likely, at last there was a chance to get back in. But it's not greed that's driving big oil companies, it's survival. Because they're discovering less and less oil with every year that passes. It's something senior oil explorers have worried about for decades.
The rate of oil discoveries has been falling ever since the 60s. The 60s were the most that was ever found, and that was 47 billion barrels per year, mainly from the Middle East. In the 70s, the rate dropped. The industry, of course, was exploring everywhere, but concentrated on the North Sea, and the rate dropped to about 35 billion barrels. And in the 80s, it was Russia's turn, and the discovery rate then dropped to 24 billion, and then the rate dropped even further in the 90s. The industry concentrated on West Africa, but only some 14 billion barrels were found, and 14 billion barrels is not enough to replace production, because the world consumes about double that amount.
No wonder the multinationals are desperate to get back into Iraq. And it's all the more urgent, because not only are they discovering less and less around the world, but production from their existing fields is falling too. In America, always the greediest consumer of oil, production has been falling for 30 years. Americans guzzle 20 million barrels of oil every day, but now they have to import over 60% of it. In the high plains of West Texas, falling production is a fact of life.
Production in Texas peaked in the early 1970s, and that's when I went into business. Throughout my career, I've watched the production rate in the United States and in Texas decline.
Jim Henry is an independent oil man. He owns around 1,000 wells. All around, the nodding donkeys are a symbol of decline. The pumps are only needed because of falling pressure in the oil fields below. There's still lots of oil down there. It's just that as the pressure drops, it comes out ever more slowly. It's an iron law of nature.
What we have here is a stripper well that's producing from about 5,000 feet down, about a mile down. It's only producing 7 barrels per day, which is not very much. Most of the wells in this area produce about 7 barrels per day. This well once produced 100 barrels per day about 30 years ago. Since then, it's declined because it's only so much oil down in the ground, so we're producing it all, and it's running out of oil.
It's not just falling pressure that causes production to decline. Oil men always try to find and exploit the biggest oil fields first. But later on, when they have to rely on small fields, there's a cost to pay.
Now the production goes down because the large fields are declining, The smaller fields come on, but they don't produce nearly as much as the larger fields. And the overall aggregate, the production declines.
In America, the trend was so pronounced that production started to fall when half the oil was still in the ground. Now the same forces are taking effect around the world. Dr. Colin Campbell is an exploration geologist with a long career in big oil. Now, Dr. Campbell leads an international group of scientists which predicts when oil production will start to fall in other areas around the world. He has long forecast the peak and decline of the British North Sea. And now, it's started.
In 1999, Britain went over the top and is declining quite rapidly. And it's now 17% down in just 3 years, and this pattern is set to continue. That means that Britain will soon be a net importer. Imports have to rise, the cost of imports have to rise, and even the security of supply is becoming a little bit uncertain.
Soon, Britain will be in the same boat as America. Today, we're self-sufficient in oil. But by 2020, we'll have to import three-quarters of our supplies. It wouldn't matter so much if there were other sources to make up the difference, but increasingly, there aren't.
It's not only the United States and Britain where production is falling. It's falling all over the world in many places. For instance, in the Norwegian North Sea, the government forecasts that in the next 10 years, production will halve. In Argentina, oil production has been down for several years. And in Colombia, which was a big producer in the 90s, production is now past the peak. Alaska, which was the savior of the United States for many years, is now in decline. Australian oil production is down, and Indonesia passed its peak some 5 years ago. Because production's falling all over the world, we're going to become increasingly reliant and vulnerable to the Middle East, and in particular, the five largest producers. Of those, the two most important from our point of view in the West are Saudi Arabia and Iraq.
You're looking at the next president of the United States.
When George Bush took power 2 years ago, his administration was already worried about the vulnerability of America's oil supplies. The buzzword was energy security. Like Bush himself, the men and women behind the president had close links to big oil. Donald Rumsfeld owned oil company shares worth millions of dollars. Condoleezza Rice was a director of Chevron for a decade. And Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the oil services company Halliburton. So he got the job of heading an energy task force on how to safeguard America's oil supplies.
Hi, Matt Simmons here. How are you?
Matt Simmons is banker to the Houston oil industry. Like Colin Campbell, he's worried by falling oil production around the world. He was also a key advisor to the Cheney Energy Task Force.
What I basically told him is that we had some looming energy problems because we'd run out of productive capacity. We'd basically in the 90s used up all of the cushions, and yellow lights were going off all over. That we were barreling into a really nasty energy crisis.
The administration was receptive to Simmons' message. The Cheney report concluded that energy security should be a priority of America's foreign policy.
Is there a paranoia about energy? That's probably not a bad description. We've been a heavy importer of oil for 2 decades, but I think that it's just the fact that so many of the areas that we used to rely on are showing signs of no longer growing and probably shrinking that gives rise to just an uncomfortable sense that we have a lot more serious energy problems to address than we've really thought about for the last 20 years.
And the U.S. administration is worried about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Most worried of all was Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. Since 1998, he and other leading hawks had openly advocated invading Iraq to protect U.S. oil supplies. In two open letters, he wrote,
"If Saddam does acquire the capability to deliver weapons of mass destruction, a significant portion of the world's supply of oil will be put at hazard. We should establish and maintain a strong U.S. military presence in the region and be prepared to use that force to protect our vital interests in the Gulf."
Holy shit. 9/11 was the most shocking terrorist atrocity America has ever known. But according to Washington Post journalist Bob Woodward, Donald Rumsfeld saw it as an opportunity. The very next day, at a National Security Council meeting, Rumsfeld urged President Bush to attack Iraq immediately, even though there was absolutely no evidence of any connection between Saddam and 9/11.
I think it's quite possible that the United States realizes the key importance of the Middle East generally to world supply, in fact, and especially its own, and that it sees Saddam Hussein as a ready-made villain, so to speak, and it finds this a convenient way in which to establish a military presence in the Middle East, aimed partially at Iraq by all means, but with a wider significance to control the production elsewhere there.
And the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
It soon became clear that most of those people were Saudis. This raised the specter of an Islamic fundamentalist revolution in the world's biggest oil producer. Saudi exports could be cut off, but that was unthinkable.
It would be apocalyptic. No American cars would move. It would cause a depression, certainly the size of the 1930s, if not worse. But they're not going to allow that to happen. This is just not going to be able to happen. They would fix it in 6 months. The world would demand it, and rightly so.
The administration's energy paranoia began to look increasingly justified. Worries about the stability of Saudi Arabia meant there was even more reason to secure Iraq as a reliable alternative.
The resolution sets out in clear terms.
America pushed its allies hard to support military action against Iraq. With Resolution 1441 last November, they seemed to be making progress. But then, last December, America's energy security took yet another turn for the worse. In Venezuela, a national strike by oil company workers and managers broke out, cutting world oil supplies by up to 2 million barrels per day. Yet another big worry for America's Commerce Secretary, Donald Evans.
I got a call from Secretary Evans just saying, is Venezuela as intractable and serious as it sounds? I'm sorry to tell you, I think it is.
Venezuela used to be the one OPEC supplier that America didn't have to worry about. Reliable and close.
They are an unbelievably important supplier. And the longer we're without Venezuela, the more we have to bring it in from someplace else. Raises the second problem. Where is someplace else? Well, it's the Middle East.
Oil prices started to soar, soon hitting $35 a barrel. America's vulnerability and Iraq's importance were more obvious than ever. But with Saddam and sanctions in place, Iraqi oil could never be fully exploited. For that, regime change was necessary.
They want to install a compliant regime so that they can develop Iraqi oil exports in a way that is secure for Western oil consumers without putting money in the hands of a unpredictable radical Arab regime.
Last month, as preparations for war gathered pace, there were massive demonstrations around the world. Millions believed it was all about oil. But Donald Rumsfeld had changed his tune. Now he claimed that oil had nothing to do with it. So did everybody else who supported the invasion.
If the oil that Iraq has were our concern, I mean, we could probably cut a deal with Saddam tomorrow in relation to the oil. It's not the oil that is the issue, it is the weapons.
What would you say if you were them? You can hardly come out and say that we want to sacrifice the infantrymen or the Iraqi children and other civilians because of our selfish oil interests.
That widely held view so worried the US and Britain, they came up with a plan. At the Azores summit, on the eve of war, they promised to safeguard Iraq's oil.
We'll make sure that Iraq's natural resources are used for the benefit of their owners, the Iraqi people.
As no doubt they should. But there's a bigger point. It hardly matters who owns and profits from Iraqi oil, so long as it provides a growing and uninterrupted supply to the West. Regime change could boost Iraqi output, some say, by 3 or even 4 times, almost equal to Saudi Arabia. Could this be the real motive?
It is a war about oil. Because production is falling all over the world, Iraq has become crucial to the continuation of supply to the West, and hence the West's living standard.
Internationally, France and Russia refuse to join the attack. They too may have been partly oil-motivated. Total and Lukoil stood to lose most from regime change. But by last week, America and Britain were ready to go it alone. A week into the invasion, US and British forces have gained a lot of ground. But the resistance has been far tougher than expected. For a war supposedly not about oil, military planners made a high priority of securing the oil fields. Apart from a handful of wells torched by Iraqi troops, the huge southern oil fields were taken largely intact. But other major oil-producing regions are still in Iraqi hands. There is still a danger, as in Kuwait 12 years ago, that massive sabotage may hit oil production for months, if not years, to come. Whatever happens, rebuilding Iraq will be a huge job. Only American and British companies have been invited to bid for contracts. Dick Cheney's old firm, Halliburton, has already got one of them. But what about the real business of carving up the oil concessions? Russia's Lukoil and France's Total were once the best-placed foreign oil companies. But their years of negotiations with the Saddam regime may now be a liability. It seems the Iraqi opposition, once in power, intends to settle scores.
Some people would be equal more than others. The French, they may stand at a disadvantage. Definitely those who have helped us all along with regime change, obviously they should have a little edge over the rest.
So Britain and America may be rewarded for being so hawkish, if you like, about the invasion.
I think even in economics this is quite acceptable, in addition, as well as the politics.
So how will the Irish fare in the post-Saddam oil scramble? They're small, and like the French and the Russians, they don't have a final contract. But still, they're hopeful.
We're well placed because the oil administration will stay the same. They may change the head, but the body will stay the same. So I would be very confident that we will be asked to undertake the exploration program in the very near future.
Whoever gets the oil concessions, the Iraqis will want to raise production from the pre-war 2 million barrels a day. They'll have to pay for reconstruction. Opinions vary on how much they could eventually pump, but the opposition has big plans.
The long-term view, I think we can reach as much as 6 million barrels a day within 7 to 10 years, but that would need a huge investment.
Even if Iraq does meet these ambitious targets, ironically, the effect on world supply could be short-lived. Iraqi oil reserves, although vast, represent just 4 years of world consumption. And by the time Iraqi oil is flowing freely, global oil production may already be in terminal decline.
Iraq, if it produces the 5 million barrels a day that I predict, will provide a very useful breathing space. But overall, production is set to decline in world terms in the next 10 or 15 years. So although it provides a breathing space, it's not going to be the palliative that we hope.
In the 1970s, it was American oil production which first went into terminal decline. In the 1990s, the North Sea followed. By 2010, most other producers, apart from the core Gulf states, may also have passed their peak. So many in the industry are now convinced we're fast approaching the day when world oil production starts to fall. For Shell, it's not a question of if, but when.
It will not be this year, next year. Within 20 years, if we have very high demand rates, we will be facing an issue. We have an issue ahead of us, probably sometime in the second quarter of this century, where we'll be looking at the decline of oil.
But Shell's prediction of falling oil production after 2025 may be optimistic. Scientists commissioned by the German government will this week announce that 2017 is the critical date. BP has no official forecast, but one scientist working for the company predicts decline could start as early as 2014. Colin Campbell and his group of independent geologists think sooner still.
By about 2010, we face the onset of the permanent decline of production at about 3% a year. So it's a two-phase crisis. It starts with a price shock due to control of the market by a few countries, and it is followed by the onset of physical shortage, which just gets worse and worse and worse.
Global oil decline will put all previous oil shocks in the shade. In the 1970s, OPEC turned off the taps, causing global recession. But at least they could turn them back on again. This time, producers will pump as fast as they can, but still the shortages will grow. This time, it's forever.
The major impact will be the realization that cheap energy is no longer part of the future. And therefore, energy is going to be priced high, whichever source we get it from. Therefore, there are going to be lifestyle changes.
Those changes could be radical if alternatives to oil are not found soon. Unlimited use of cars and cheap flights around the world may well be a thing of the past. International trade, the very basis of the global economy, will suffer.
It'll be a poorer world. It'll be a much more restricted world in every way.
There are many good reasons for getting rid of Saddam Hussein. It seems the US administration privately thinks one of them is oil. The war is certainly not about anything as trivial as the profits of individual companies. But it may well be about opening up Iraq's reserves as world oil production approaches terminal decline. Ironically, even if that strategy succeeds, we in the West will not be protected for long.
High prices are going to usher in a reality of the seriousness of our energy problems. Physical shortages are a real, real serious concern.
This is going to lead to severe international tension. And we could look back in 20 years' time and see the present crisis as the first of the oil wars.
Tomorrow night, a money program special. How massive gambles brought down the world's oldest insurer and damaged the pension prospects of a million policyholders. That's The Death of Equitable Life, tomorrow at 9:50.